Welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we take complex information and distill it into those essential aha moments.
That feeling, right? When something dense suddenly just clicks.
Exactly. Today, we're plunging into the fascinating and yet often brutal world of grocery retail.
Specifically Poland, right?
Specifically Poland. To understand a company that has, well, truly defied expectations. Carved out a really unique path to massive success.
Sounds intriguing.
We're talking about Dino Polska S.A. Now, that name might not ring a bell if you're not, you know, deep into European equities.
Uh-huh.
But their business model is, frankly, a masterclass in strategic growth and competitive advantage.
Okay.
Our mission today is to unpack this unique high-growth compounder. We'll explore its distinctive approach, its remarkable financial prowess.
And the challenges, I assume. There are always challenges.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, the very real challenges it faces as it matures.
What's truly fascinating here, I think, is that Dino Polska isn't just, you know, another supermarket chain.
Right.
It really represents a compelling case study, how a company can carve out a uniquely defensible niche.
Even in a super competitive market.
Even in a hyper-competitive, seemingly saturated market, yeah. We'll be looking at how they've achieved this exceptional growth and returns, built a powerful moat, as they say, around their business.
Makes sense.
But equally important, we'll be analyzing those critical questions like, is their premium valuation in the stock market sustainable, especially as the landscape matures and competition heats up?
It's like a tightrope walk.
It really is, and we're going to examine every step.
So get ready to explore how a company focused on small towns became a market disruptor.
And why owning land matters more than you might ever imagine in retail. It's huge.
And also, what a very recent, pretty significant shift in its core sales figures could mean for its future trajectory.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's dig in. What makes Dino tick, and what are those challenges ahead?
Okay, let's unpack this. Our first mission. Let's try and crack the code of Dino's model. It seems simple, but it's clearly powerfully effective.
How did they build this business that doesn't just compete with the giants, but actually thrives by staying small in a very specific way, I mean?
Okay, let's start with the basics then. What is Dino Polska?
Yeah, it's often described as this nationwide network of medium-sized proximity supermarkets.
Proximity supermarkets, exactly. That concept might sound straightforward, but the execution is absolutely key.
Execution is everything, right?
Their core value proposition, as you said, it's convenience delivered through really strategic location choices.
So putting stores where people actually are.
Precisely. Dino deliberately places its stores close to customers. They're optimizing for those daily or maybe very frequent trips, not necessarily the big weekly stock up.
Right, not the massive weekend haul.
Exactly. It's a deliberate counter to the extremes you see in Polish retail.
Extremes? Like what?
Well, on one hand, you've got those tiny traditional corner shops. They just don't have the variety or, you know, the modern feel consumers want now. And on the other hand, you have those massive, distant hypermarkets. You know the type, requires a big drive, finding parking. It takes up half your Saturday sometimes.
Yeah, damn there.
Dino finds that sweet spot in between. They offer a carefully curated assortment around 5,000 SKU's stock keeping units.
So 5,000 different products, roughly.
Roughly, yeah. It's not an overwhelming selection, but it's deliberately balanced. You've got well-known national brands, but crucially, a very strong selection of fresh products.
Fresh is key.
It's designed to meet about 95% of what a typical household needs daily or, you know, maybe weekly.
Okay.
Imagine combining that grab-and-go convenience, the local feel of a corner store, with the product breadth, competitive pricing, and importantly, the perceived quality of a full-service supermarket.
That's the Dino experience.
That's pretty much the Dino experience, yeah.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, think about your own shopping habits, right? How often do you just prioritize convenience over a massive selection, especially for everyday stuff?
Yeah.
Milk, bread, some fruit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This model speaks directly to that modern consumer trend. Valuing time, valuing ease.
You don't want to wander miles of aisles for milk after work.
No way. And it sounds like they really perfected that approach.
Seems like it.
And the genius, I think, is truly in the standardization of that model.
Standardization? How so?
A typical Dino store is remarkably consistent. Size-wise, around 400 square meters, that's about 4,300 square feet.
Okay, consistent size.
And it always features a consistent internal layout. And critically dedicated parking right outside. every time.
Right. Parking's crucial.
This uniformity isn't just, you know, a nice to have. It's an immense operational advantage.
How does that help?
It streamlines literally everything across their rapidly expanding network, from the initial construction of new stores to the complex logistics of stocking shelves, training staff, managing them, even their marketing. It's all simplified.
So this isn't just about efficiency. It's about speed, too, and like replication.
Absolutely. Speed and, you could almost say, industrial scale replication. This repeatable engine, as they call it internally.
Oh, repeatable engine. I like that.
It's allowed them to rapidly and cost effectively roll out new stores across Poland. It's like they found the perfect blueprint and they just keep stamping it out with incredible precision.
That explains the rapid expansion.
It does. By the first quarter of 2025, their total selling area had already hit a massive 1.08 million square meters.
Wow.
Which is a significant 12.9% year-over-year increase. The real aha here, I think, is that this isn't just about opening stores randomly.
No.
It's about optimizing a manufacturing process for new retail units, creating this compounding advantage where every new store learns from the last, driving down costs, accelerating time to profitability.
In a way, their less standardized competitors just can't match easily.
Exactly. They'd have to start from scratch each time, pretty much.
Okay, so that mastery of standardization lets them make other bold moves.
Exactly. It frees them up to make even more audacious strategic choices, like their brilliant contrarian move.
Which was?
Well, while major competitors historically swarmed the urban centers, focusing on high-density populations.
Yeah, the obvious places.
Dino deliberately targeted smaller, less urbanized communities.
So they zigged when everyone else sagged. That's a classic contrarian play.
Pretty much.
But was there a significant risk in doing that? Deliberately avoiding the big cities? Did they face skepticism or maybe tough local competition already there?
That's a great question. There was certainly an element of, you know, counterintuition to it. Maybe some initial skepticism from people focused on traditional retail metrics.
Oh, yes.
However, the data ultimately showed their model is designed to be profitable even in catchment areas with populations as small as, say, 2,500 to 3,500 residents.
Wow, that's tiny. Right. Those big players wouldn't even look twice at that.
Exactly. That demographic density is often seen as insufficient or unprofitable by the larger players, the hypermarkets, even some bigger discounters.
Why is that?
Because those players need a much larger customer base to justify their bigger footprint and higher operating costs. Dino found its niche where others didn't see enough opportunity.
Sure.
So this contrarian approach gave Dino a truly dominant, defensible presence in small towns, villages, the quieter suburbs of larger cities.
Places the others ignored.
Right. They faced significantly fewer direct, large format competitors there, allowing them to become the immediate go-to grocery option.
Okay. And the expansion itself, was it just random dots on a map?
No, not at all. It's incredibly methodical and clustered. They started in the Wielkopolska region, Western Poland. That's their home turf.
Right.
And then slowly but surely began creeping into adjacent regions, like just moving next door.
Creeping? Why creeping?
Well, this method is incredibly logistically efficient. New stores can be serviced by existing distribution centers, minimizing transport costs.
Ah, makes sense.
And it also lets them build strong regional brand recognition and customer loyalty before they move into a completely new area. It de-risks each new market entry.
Smart expansion.
By March 2025, their network density hit 7.3 stores per 100,000 inhabitants nationally. That's a remarkable penetration, showing how deeply embedded they are now.
So rather than fighting the giants head on in the crowded cities, they found their own quiet corner and became the king of it.
That's a good way to put it.
But what does this all mean for their competitive edge? How do they really stand out to a customer beyond just location?
Yeah.
Because convenience is great, but people want quality too, specific things.
Yeah, their competitive edge is actually quite multi-layered. It's born from this blend of strategic choices.
Okay.
But arguably, the single most powerful, most tangible differentiator for the Polish consumer, and a true cornerstone of their value proposition,
go on,
is the staffed fresh meat counter in every single store.
Every store. A real butcher counter.
Essentially, yes. And this isn't just any meat. It's supplied by AgroRidzina.
AgroRidzina.
Yeah, it's a meat processing and production plant that Dino Polska actually acquired way back in 2003, long before their IPO.
So they own their own meat supply. Vertically integrated.
They do. They've expanded it considerably since then, even opened a new modern plant in 2020.
That vertical integration for meat is genuinely unique for a modern grocer.
Mm.
Sets them apart immediately.
Absolutely.
But couldn't that also be a vulnerability? What if consumer tastes shift away from fresh meat? Or there's a supply chain issue for meat? Does owning it all remove flexibility?
It's a fair point. Any vertical integration carries certain risks, for sure.
Right.
However, in the Polish context, the demand for fresh, high-quality meat is still incredibly strong. It's culturally significant.
Ah.
Polish cuisine often revolves around meat, and consumers really value choosing specific cuts from a butcher-style counter, much more than just picking up prepackaged stuff you find in many discounters.
So for now, it's a big strength.
For now, it's a profound strength, yes. This ownership gives Dino direct, unparalleled control over quality, consistency, supply of what is a critical category for Polish consumers, and a major driver of customer traffic.
Unlike rivals like Biedronka and Lidl.
Exactly. They primarily offer only prepackaged meats from external suppliers. It's a totally different experience.
Okay. And how important is fresh overall for Dino?
Hugely important. Fresh products, especially meat and related items, drive significant traffic and revenue. It accounted for an impressive 42% of their revenue in Q1 2025.
42%. Wow.
And that vertical integration likely means superior gross margins on these key products. Lower spoilage rates, too, because of direct daily deliveries from their own plant.
And a better perception of quality.
A much stronger perception of quality and freshness for consumers, yeah. Beyond meat, their broader strategy emphasizes direct relationships with other domestic and regional Polish producers, too.
So local sourcing.
Exactly. Offering these regional brands and fresh produce gives customers affordable, high-quality alternatives. It's almost like a private label strategy.
But what's the cost?
Without the significant marketing and brand development costs you usually associate with private labels. It builds trust, taps into that buy local feeling.
Okay, now this next bit might not sound exciting initially, but you flagged it as fundamentally critical.
Yes, absolutely.
Unlike many competitors who lease store locations, Dino owns about 90% of his properties, including the land underneath.
90%.
That's massive. Almost unheard of in modern retail, isn't it?
It really is. This ownership model isn't just a preference. It's a self-reinforcing competitive advantage. It provides huge structural benefits.
Like what?
Firstly, it insulates them from commercial rent inflation. That can be a volatile, ever-increasing cost for rivals who lease.
Right, they don't have landlords hiking the rent.
Exactly. It also sidesteps the accounting complexities of IFRS 16.
IFRS 16, remind me.
It's an international accounting standard. Basically requires companies to put nearly all leases onto their balance sheet as assets and liabilities, even ones that used to be off balance sheet.
Yep.
For companies renting loads of properties, this can really alter their financial statements, makes their perceived debt look higher, sometimes obscures underlying profitability.
But Dino avoids that.
Dino, by owning its properties, neatly sidesteps that whole layer of accounting scrutiny and perceived financial burden. So they enjoy this structural operating cost advantage that just deepens over time. No rising rent expenses eating into margins.
So they're not just a grocery retailer. They're also kind of a real estate development company in disguise.
Precisely. That's a great way to put it.
That's a fascinating, almost old school combination for a modern, fast-growing chain. Building a physical empire alongside the retail one.
Exactly. And this dual identity gives them unparalleled strategic flexibility.
How so?
Well, Dino isn't constrained by, say, the availability of space in existing retail parks or the whims of landlords, which often dictate where competitors can open.
Right.
Instead, they can precisely execute their data-driven site selection model, buying land and building stores exactly where their analysis shows an underserved population exists.
Which fits perfectly with their rural strategy.
It's a crucial enabler of that rural strategy, yeah. Suitable lease properties in those smaller areas are often scarce or just don't exist.
Makes sense.
And furthermore, that owned property portfolio itself, it acts as a significant and growing asset right there on the company's balance sheet.
Tangible assets.
Very tangible. As of March 2025, their total assets were around $3.31 billion USD. A substantial chunk of that is property, plant, and equipment.
And that helps with financing.
Definitely. This asset base provides strong collateral, letting them get very favorable financing terms for their aggressive expansion, all while maintaining a very low net debt profile. It's a virtuous cycle.
How does that cycle work?
Profitable retail funds buying valuable land, which strengthens the balance sheet, allowing keeper borrowing for more expansion.
Got it.
It's this integrated model of retail ops and real estate ownership that creates a formidable capital-intensive moat. really hard for competitors to replicate.
That strategy sounds like the bedrock of their long-term case. Mm-hmm. Operational advantage and a strong valuation floor.
Absolutely. It's fundamental.
Okay. Let's zoom out from Dino's specific playbook now. Look at the broader picture. The Polish grocery retail market.
Right. The context.
It's immense. Nearly 40 million people. Estimated value, what, PLN, 435 billion, around 100 billion in 2024.
It's a huge market, yeah. And analysts project continued growth, too.
So not just a big pie to fight over, it's a growing one.
Indeed. It's very large and dynamic. Now, while it's often described as maturing,
yeah, I've heard that.
That primarily applies to the large format hypermarkets. They've definitely seen declining market share for years. Consumers are shifting away from those massive distant shopping trips.
Okay, so not the whole market is maturing.
No, the overall market is still relatively fragmented compared to, say, Western Europe.
How fragmented?
Well, in many Western European countries, the top 5 or 10 retailers might control 85%, maybe 90% of the market.
Right.
In Poland, the top 20 retailers command about 75%. That indicates there's still considerable room for consolidation and significant market share shifts among the leading formats.
So maturing doesn't mean stagnant or saturated everywhere.
Not at all. It means the growth is happening in different, more nimble, more convenient formats, precisely where Dino operates.
And speaking of those formats, the Polish grocery scene is famously dominated by foreign-owned discount chains, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You hear a lot about them, particularly the fierce competition.
Who are the main players?
The titans are undeniably Biedronka, Portuguese-owned, the undisputed leader. Estimated 20% market share of all food and grocery in Poland. They're a powerhouse.
20%. Okay.
Who else? Then there's Lidl, German-owned, very strong second player, about 6% market share.
And Dino.
Dino Polska has rapidly climbed to number 3, securing a substantial 5-6% share. So they're effectively tying with, or sometimes slightly ahead of, Lidl now.
Wow, number 3 already.
Yeah, these three players in particular, Biedronka, Lidl, and Dino, have gained significantly, mostly at the expense of those traditional, smaller mom-and-pop stores and the legacy hypermarkets that used to dominate.
And this intense competition, it's led to this aggressive price war, especially between Biedronka and Lidl.
That's right. We've heard stories they're literally slashing prices to fight for market share.
What does that mean for Dino?
Yeah.
And its profitability. Can they afford to compete on price like that?
Well, this price war is, without a doubt, putting significant downward pressure on gross margins across the entire sector, including Dino. It's a high-stakes battle.
Doesn't sound good.
But it's crucial to see this not just as a sign of industry decline. It's more like a winner-take-most struggle, playing out within the healthiest, fastest-growing segment of Polish retail, the discounters and proximity formats.
So as the old formats lose ground.
Exactly. As legacy formats like hypermarkets and independent stores cede ground, these top players, Biedronka, Lidl, Dino, are fiercely competing for that liberated market share.
So what's Dino's challenge then?
It's a delicate balancing act. They need to compete on price where absolutely necessary, you know, on staples, to avoid losing price-sensitive customers.
Yeah.
But simultaneously, and maybe more importantly, they must leverage their unique differentiators. That fantastic fresh meat offering, their superior convenience model.
To avoid becoming just another discounter.
Precisely. To avoid becoming a pure price taker that just cuts margins to the bone, they need to give customers reasons beyond just price to choose Dino. It's a tough needle to thread.
So price is undeniably important, especially with recent inflation.
Paramount.
But what else are Polish consumers really looking for right now? Beyond the lowest price tag, what's driving their choices? Shaping the market.
Well, high inflation certainly made price sensitivity paramount, as you said. Consumers are acutely aware of value, discounts, promotions, naturally favoring discounters. But simultaneously, there's a very strong secular trend towards convenience. People are increasingly time poor. Yeah. They prefer shopping closer to home, valuing their time and ease over the vast selection of distant hypermarkets. You see that in footfall data, it's stagnating in big centers, while smaller, convenient formats like Dino are thriving.
Who else?
Furthermore, there's growing awareness of health and wellness. It's fueling demand for fresh, high-quality, and locally sourced products.
Which plays right into Dino's hands.
Perfectly. It aligns exactly with their strategic focus on fresh categories and that vertical integration with AgroRedZena. Consumers increasingly distrust long, opaque supply chains. They want transparency, which local sourcing provides.
So Dino seems perfectly positioned, capturing these converging trends. Value, convenience, fresh, local.
It's almost as if their business model was designed for this exact moment in Polish consumer evolution, yeah.
And the broader economy. Is it helping or hindering?
Well, the macroeconomic backdrop for 2024 and 2025 looks quite supportive, actually, providing an additional tailwind.
How so?
We're seeing moderating inflation, which is a relief for budgets, plus robust real wage growth.
Okay.
That combination should bolster household disposable income and overall consumption, providing a very welcome boost for the entire retail sector. It creates a more favorable environment, assuming they manage costs and competition.
Okay, we've talked a lot about physical stores, their importance, Dino's strategy there. But what about online?
Ah, the digital question.
E-commerce is huge globally. Poland's no exception.
Yeah.
Forecast to grow massively over PLN, 94 billion between 2021 and 2027. Food and grocery, a big part of that digital shift.
Right.
And we know Biedronka and Lidl, Dino's main rivals, are actively getting into online sales using partnerships, third-party delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Which raises the question, where is Dino in all this? Is their absence a blind spot? Are they missing the boat?
It's fascinating, isn't it? Dino Polska's conspicuous absence from the digital space.
Conspicuous is the word.
Their public communications, their strategic plans.
Yeah.
They focus almost exclusively on the rapid rollout of physical stores. Absolutely no significant mention of e-commerce or an omnichannel strategy.
Is that an oversight? Or deliberate?
Oh, it's not an oversight. It's a very calculated risk. Management is essentially betting.
Betting on what?
Betting that their core target demographic, you know, in those rural and semi-urban areas, has less immediate online demand for groceries compared to dense cities.
Okay.
And they're also likely calculating that the unit economics for online delivery in those less dense regions are currently unfavorable.
Meaning it's too expensive to deliver profitably.
Basically, yeah. Too expensive to deliver a few bags of groceries to a spread out customer base and still make money.
So what's the benefit of staying offline?
This strategic choice lets them dedicate 100% of their capital, 100% of management focus, to their proven, highly profitable physical store model, the one they know works exceptionally well.
It's a capital efficiency play. Focus only on what makes money today.
Essentially, yes.
But what about the long term? Could this physical stores only approach become a vulnerability? Especially as digital adoption keeps spreading, consumer habits change. What if that rural customer does eventually want online delivery?
It absolutely creates potential long-term vulnerability, no question.
How so?
As digital adoption inevitably spreads beyond Poland's big cities, and it will eventually, and as competitors like Biedronka and Lidl refine their online models, maybe even subsidize delivery initially to build market share, Dino risks ceding the entire e-commerce channel to its rivals. Over time, this could lead to a loss of share in a customer's total grocery wallet.
Even if they stay loyal for some physical trip.
Even if they remain loyal to Dino's physical stores for certain things, yeah. They might increasingly turn online for bulk buys, heavy items, or just the sheer convenience of home delivery.
This is a big strategic question for the next decade.
It is. The decision to remain pure play brick and mortar in an increasingly digital world, it's a key strategic question, a bold bet, really.
Betting that digital won't reach their core customers significantly, or it'll stay unprofitable for others.
Something like that. Or maybe they think they can enter later if needed. But if they're wrong, it's a significant strategic gap.
Right. Now, for any high-growth story, the numbers eventually have to back it up. And Dino's financial history is, well, nothing short of explosive.
It really has been something to watch.
Since its 2017 IPO, it's been one of the most dynamic growth stories on the Warsaw Stock Exchange. Looking at the numbers, it's like watching a rocket launch.
Absolutely. Just look at the store network. From 2015 to the end of 2024, it grew nearly fivefold. 511 stores to an astounding 2,688 locations.
Five times growth in stores. Wow.
And this physical expansion translated directly into staggering top-line growth. Revenue compounded at, what, an average annual rate of 29.9% just between 2022 and 2024?
Nearly 30% a year recently.
And if you look longer term, since 2014, sales CGR is 30.2%. Earnings per share grew even faster, 42.9% CGR over that same period.
Faster profit growth than revenue.
Yeah. shows significant operating leverage, meaning profits grew proportionally faster than revenues because their fixed costs got spread over a rapidly increasing sales base.
And what drove that phenomenal growth?
Two main engines. Aggressive new store openings, obviously. And until very recently, incredibly strong like-for-like or LFL sales growth in their existing stores.
Yeah, this LFL growth, same-store sales growth, that sounds critical.
It is.
And after those extraordinary numbers, where are they? 28.5% in 2022, 17.2% in 2022.
Those huge numbers, yeah.
The metric decelerated dramatically, down to 5.3% in 2024, and then almost flat, just 0.5% in Q1 2025.
A near standstill, yeah.
That's a very sharp slowdown.
Yeah.
What's driving that sudden deceleration? Why the sudden stop?
This sharp slowdown is primarily, though not entirely, down to the normalization of food price inflation in Poland.
Ah, inflation coming down.
Exactly. During 2022 and 2023, high inflation was actually a significant tailwind for retailers like Dino.
How so?
It allowed them to implement substantial price increases, which directly boosted the value of sales in existing stores. They didn't necessarily need to sell more items to get higher revenue.
Right. Prices just went up. Made revenue growth easier.
Exactly. But as inflation has subsided, that pricing tailwind has effectively disappeared.
So what happened in 2024 then?
In 2024, the entire 5.3% LFL growth came purely from an increase in the volume of products sold. They sold more units.
Okay, selling more stuff is good, right?
It is, but the net average price of their goods was actually slightly deflationary.
So they were selling more items, but at slightly lower average prices.
Correct, which led to that much lower LFL growth in monetary terms. Selling more, but making less per item on average.
Okay, so how does this impact their profitability?
Yeah.
Especially with their cost structure.
Yeah.
Sounds like they're having to work a lot harder now.
Exactly. This highlights the double-edged sword of operational leverage in their model.
Double-edged sword.
Think of a factory. In boom times, producing tons, the cost of the building, machinery fixed costs get spread over so many units, each costs little to make. Profit soar. Leverage works for you. But now with LFL growth near zero, it's like the factory is running at low capacity.
Okay.
The rent machines cost the same. And labor costs are actually rising in Poland, demanding market minimum wage hikes.
So leverage works against you.
Precisely. Those fixed costs are now spread over fewer revenue dollars from existing stores, eating more significantly into profit margins.
And we saw that in the numbers.
Yes. This dynamic is the direct cause of the EBITDA margin compression in 2024. Their margin fell 80 basis points from 8.7% down to 7.9%.
So what does this mean for the future? Their profitability, their valuation?
The future sustainability of Dino's premium profitability, and by extension its valuation, now hinges almost entirely on two critical factors.
Which are?
One, the continued pace and high return on investment of new store openings. That's crucial.
Okay. And two?
Two, their ability to restore a normalized LFL growth rate, whether through more volume, new products, maybe some pricing power returning, something that can at least offset that underlying cost inflation in existing stores.
And the market is trying to figure out what that new normal LFL rate will be.
That's exactly what the market is grappling with. It's a primary source of investor uncertainty right now.
Okay. Despite these recent headwinds, the LFL slowdown, their capital efficiency still sounds like a hallmark of a high-quality business.
Absolutely.
That's why they're often called a compounding machine, right?
Yeah.
What exactly does that mean for our listeners?
Think of it like this. A compounding machine is a business that's just so good at generating profits from what it already has, and so adept at finding new, highly profitable ways to reinvest those profits back into the business, like building new stores, in Dino's case,
right,
that its growth accelerates organically, almost like a snowball rolling downhill. They're not just growing. They're generating new growth from their own growth.
Taking a dollar profit and turning it into much more future value.
That's the essence of it. That's what defines Dino as a true compounder. They consistently generate high return on invested capital, ROIC, and return on equity, ROE.
What are those numbers like?
Looking at trailing 12-month figures, ROE is around 22.9%, ROIC about 15.4%, though some analyses cite ROIC over 20%.
Pretty good returns.
Very good. What's truly remarkable is maintaining these high rates while deploying massive amounts of new capital. Total capital employed is up, what, 191% in 5 years?
Wow.
This ability to reinvest huge sums at such consistently high rates, that's a core tenet of the long-term bullish case for Dino.
And at the store level.
Even more compelling.
Wow.
Mature stores are estimated to generate an ROIC of 30% to 40%.
Yeah.
Very profitable units.
And their balance sheet. Is it strong enough to handle all this capital deployment?
It's a fortress. They maintain very low leverage. Net debt to EBITDA fell from 0.76x in 2022 down to almost negligible, 0.1x by the end of 2024.
Almost no debt.
Pretty much. Gives them huge financial flexibility, resilience. Crucial for a company funding growth internally.
And operationally. Cash flow.
They benefit from a negative working capital cycle. Average cash conversion cycle is about minus 25 days.
Minus 25 days. What does that mean?
It means Dino typically sells its inventory and collects cash from customers long before it has to pay its suppliers.
So suppliers are basically giving them interest-free financing.
Effectively, yes. For their inventory, it's an incredible advantage.
And that generates cash.
This efficiency plus strong profitability generated PLN $2.55 billion in operating cash flow in 2024. That's a 44% year-over-year increase.
And where does that cash go?
It's fully reinvested, straight back into their new store growth engine. It's a self-funding, high-growth flywheel. Needs very little external debt.
Okay, so given that LFL growth has slowed, new store openings are now more crucial than ever for overall growth.
Yeah, absolutely critical.
What's the plan for expansion? How many more Dino stores can we expect? How long can they keep this pace up?
The cornerstone of their strategy is rapid organic expansion. Their whole operational financial setup is geared towards it.
How many stores are they opening?
In 2024, they opened 283 new stores. That was actually an acceleration from the 250 they opened in 2023.
Accelerating openings even now.
Yep. And management guided for further acceleration in 2025. A percentage increase in openings in the high teens compared to 2024.
And it's all self-funded.
Almost entirely through internally generated cash flow. A testament to the profitability of existing stores and that efficient working capital cycle.
So the big question, how much room is there for more stores in Poland? Is saturation a risk? Or is there still plenty of white space, especially with their rural focus?
Because even rural areas get saturated eventually, right?
Right.
That's a key debate among analysts, absolutely central to the long-term investment case.
What does management say?
Management argues that with only about 6% market share nationally, there remains significant white space for growth, both by increasing density in existing regions and expanding into new ones.
And external analyses.
More optimistic ones support this. Some even estimate a theoretical total addressable market of up to 11,000 stores in Poland, based on population, retail footprint.
11,000. That's more than four times their current network.
It is. More conservative estimates put the total market maybe 4,000 to 6,000 stores. Still implies a doubling or more of the current footprint.
So consensus seems to be there's a long runway for growth in absolute store count.
Yes. Seems like they have many more potential locations to open.
But there's always a but.
However, the law of large numbers kicks in. As the store base grows, maintaining a high percentage growth rate requires an ever larger absolute number of new openings each year.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Opening 340 stores on base of 1,800 like they did between 2021 and 2022, that's nearly 19% unit growth. But opening that same 340 stores on a future base of, say, 3,000 stores, that's only 11% growth.
Ah, the percentage slows down even if the number of openings stays the same, like gravity catching up?
Exactly. It means the company's overall revenue growth rate is mathematically destined to decelerate over the long term, even if the absolute pace of openings stays high.
And the market is watching for that slowdown.
The market is grappling with when this inevitable slowdown in percentage growth will become apparent and how it will re-rate the stock in response, because that premium valuation is based on those historical high percentage growth rates. It's a subtle but profound shift investors are watching.
Okay, a strong growth strategy needs strong leadership. Mm-hmm. Who's at the helm? How does their involvement shape Dino's direction, especially with such a long-term strategy?
The founder, Tomasz Brunacki, is incredibly influential. He's chairman of the supervisory board and crucially holds a controlling 51% stake in the company.
51%. Still majority owner.
Yep. That high insider ownership is a powerful aligning force. Ensures management interests are closely tied to long-term shareholder value.
Real skin in the game.
Absolutely. When the founder has that much control, it tends to instill a very long-term perspective. Focus on sustainable growth, not just short-term results.
And compensation. Does it align too?
Their compensation policy for the management board reflects this performance culture too. Remuneration is heavily weighted to variable components quarterly, annual bonuses tied to specific metrics.
Like sales growth, profitability.
Exactly. Sales growth, profitability, operational efficiency. And what's more, the total annual bonus pool for the management board and key managers is explicitly capped at 1% of the Dino Group's consolidated net profit.
So executive pay is directly linked to bottom line results. Prevents excessive payouts.
Right. It prevents payouts getting divorced from the company's true performance.
And how do they allocate capital? Is it as disciplined as their expansion strategy suggests?
It's a model of simplicity and discipline. They reinvest virtually 100% of operating cash flow into opening new high ROIC stores.
No dividends, no M&A.
The company has a stated policy of no dividends, and they've largely avoided mergers and acquisitions, preferring to focus exclusively on their proven organic growth formula.
Why avoid M&A?
This laser focus lets them refine their successful model without the distractions and integration risks that often come with M&A.
So where does the money go?
Capital expenditures are significant. Budgeted PLN, $1.7 to $1.8 billion for 2025 alone, primarily for new store construction and expanding their logistics network to support them.
Anything else notable in CapEx?
A noteworthy and growing component is investment in sustainability initiatives.
Like what?
Like installing photovoltaic, PV, solar panels on store roofs. Systematically.
Solar panels? How widespread is that?
As of Q1 2025, an impressive 94% of their entire network, that's 2,569 stores, had PV installations, plus 4 distribution centers.
Wow, almost the whole network. Does that pay off?
It does. Not only reduces environmental impact, but provides a long-term operational cost advantage by significantly lowering electricity expenses. It's a pragmatic investment. Pays off over time.
Any governance quirks we should know about? Especially with that strong founder involvement. Any potential red flags for investors?
Well, they generally comply with most of the best practices for WSE-listed companies, which is good. But they do note specific exceptions.
Such as?
For instance, they don't have a formalized diversity policy for their boards. They state members are chosen based purely on competence and experience, regardless of other attributes.
Okay, anything else?
Another point of interest is their long-term single-source relationship with Kraut Invest. A separate construction company owned by Dino's founder, Tomas Biernacki.
Related party transactions. That often raises eyebrows.
It does. Potential conflicts of interest are always a concern. However, Dino justifies this by citing the superior efficiency, standardization, and reliability this model provides for their rapid expansion compared to using multiple contractors.
Are there checks and balances?
Yes. They say the relationship is governed by a master agreement and requires approval from independent members of the supervisory board.
Independent board members.
The supervisory board itself includes 2 independent members who also form the core of the audit committee. That aligns with standard governance best practices for oversight. So it's a known quirk, but with internal controls in place.
Okay. Every high-growth story, no matter how brilliant, has its risks. Let's talk about those now. What are the major ones for Dino Polska, particularly operationally, competitively? Where could this impressive machine stumble?
The most significant and immediate risk, I'd say, is that intensifying competition, especially from the 2 big players, Biedronka and Lidl.
Right, the price war.
Exactly. That ongoing price war between them has the potential to create sustained pressure on gross margins across the whole sector.
So if Dino has to match those deep price cuts...
If Dino is forced to match deep cuts on a wider range of products to defend its market share, its profitability could be significantly eroded.
Even with their differentiators.
While they have differentiators like fresh meat and convenience, price is still a powerful lever. It deeply affects consumer choice. Prolonged aggressive pricing by rivals could force Dino's hand.
Okay, competition is risk number one. What about internal costs, like labor? You mentioned wage growth in Poland.
Rising labor costs are a very material headwind, yes.
Oh.
Poland's seen a demanding labor market, low unemployment, significant minimum wage increases mandated by the government.
Yeah, Dino has a lot of employees.
Nearly 50,000 at the end of 2024. So rising labor costs represent a magnified pressure on their operating margins.
Especially now, with low LSL growth.
That pressure is particularly acute now, yeah.
Yeah.
With low LFL growth, it's hard for them to offset that cost inflation with revenue growth from existing stores. They're paying more for the same output, essentially.
Any other operational risks?
There's also the ongoing expansion execution risk. Their strategy relies on that aggressive store rollout.
And that carries risks.
Oh, yeah. Consistently finding and acquiring suitable land plots. Managing a high volume of construction projects simultaneously, hundreds of sites at once.
And staffing.
And effectively hiring and training thousands of new employees each year to staff those new locations while maintaining service standards. Any stumble or inefficiency in that well-oiled machine could slow growth and directly impact results. Then beyond the operational stuff, Dino is, you know, a consumer-facing retailer. So it's intrinsically sensitive to the health of the broader Polish economy.
Consumer spending.
And the disposable income of its customers, yeah. A significant economic downturn, higher unemployment, drop in consumer confidence would undoubtedly impact spending and sales.
And we saw their sensitivity to inflation, too.
We did. Their recent performance showed that clearly. High food inflation was a strong tailwind in 2022-23.
Help LFL sales.
Right. But the current environment of moderating inflation, even some deflationary pricing, is proving to be a significant headwind for revenue growth.
What about future costs?
A future scenario of high input cost inflation, like energy or commodities, without the ability to pass those costs on to consumers, that would severely squeeze margins.
And the regulatory landscape.
Right.
Any potential government interventions or policy changes that could hit them?
The Polish retail sector is subject to various regulations that can and have impacted operations.
Like the Sunday trading ban.
Exactly. That significantly altered shopping patterns when it came in a few years ago.
So future interventions are possible.
The potential for future interventions, whether on competition policy, new environmental standards needing costly upgrades, changes in taxes on large retailers, remains a constant uncertainty. Any large retailer in Poland has to contend with that. These are external factors, largely outside Dino's control, but could definitely impact profitability.
Okay, we talked about market saturation earlier. That theoretical maximum number of stores, how does that weigh on their long-term prospects, even if it feels, you know, distant right now?
Well, while the consensus is they still have a long runway for growth in absolute store numbers, thousands more stores theoretically possible.
Yeah.
The Polish market, ultimately, is finite. There's a long-term risk that the pace of new openings will inevitably have to slow down as the best, most profitable locations get occupied.
Saturation is inevitable eventually.
Market saturation is a distant but certain eventuality for any growth company, yeah.
Yeah.
And the market might start pricing in that slowdown well before it actually happens.
Because markets look ahead.
Exactly. Stock markets are forward-looking. They anticipate future growth, don't just react to the past. So even the hint of growth slowing down years from now could lead to a derating of the stock. It's a risk to consider, even if it's years away, because investors are always trying to guess the future.
Okay, let's talk valuation.
Yeah.
Dino consistently trades at a premium compared to his peers. What does that actually mean? And what's the risk associated with paying that premium? Does it make them more vulnerable?
This premium is in itself a risk because it sets a very high bar for performance. The stock trades at high multiples, like a price to exceeding 30x. That's notably higher than the industry average of around 26x for European grocers. Price to book is also substantially elevated.
And why the premium?
This valuation is explicitly predicated on the market's expectation. The expectation of continued high growth and superior returns from Dino Polska for years to come.
The market is saying, we believe you'll keep outperforming and we'll pay up for that.
That's essentially it, yeah. We're willing to pay today for that future performance.
So if they don't meet those lofty expectations, does that premium become a penalty?
Exactly. Any failure to meet these lofty expectations could be slowing growth, margin compression from competition, execution missteps and expansion.
Yeah.
Any of that could trigger a significant derating of the stock.
Derating meaning the multiple collapses.
Right. And in that scenario, investors face the dual risk, lower earnings and a lower multiple applied to those earnings.
A double whammy.
A double whammy, yeah. That combination can lead to substantial capital loss. This is precisely why that recent LFL slowdown is the central point of the current investment debate.
Because it challenges the growth narrative.
It directly challenges the robust growth narrative that underpins Dino's premium valuation. The market's questioning if they can maintain the historical performance that justifies the current price tag. And if not, how much of that premium is justified going forward? But while traditional earnings multiples like PE are important, it's crucial to acknowledge the hidden value embedded in Dino's balance sheet.
Hidden value.
That extensive owned real estate portfolio we talked about.
The land and buildings again.
Right. As of March 2025, total assets around $3.31 billion USD. A significant portion is property, plant, and equipment. Physical assets.
So the land and buildings themselves have inherent value, separate from the grocery business.
Yeah.
Like a safety net.
Or a valuation floor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It provides a tangible valuation floor, often not fully captured by traditional multiples focused purely on retail earnings.
How does that help? Well, in a hypothetical scenario where retail operations falter for some reason, the underlying real estate would still hold substantial value.
Reduces the downside risk.
This asset base acts as a fundamental layer of security, yeah? Significantly reducing long-term downside risk. Provides a layer of stability absent in competitors who just lease properties. It's a key part of their moat, a structural advantage. Makes them more resilient than a pure-play retailer. And if you look at analyst models using discounted cash flow, DCF methods.
DCF. Explain that briefly.
DCF essentially tries to estimate a company's true value today by predicting all the cash it'll generate in the future, then discounting that back to today's dollars, like putting a price tag on a long-term promise.
Okay. What do those models show for Dino?
They show a wide range of potential intrinsic values, which highlights how sensitive these models are to assumptions.
Any examples?
Some publicly available DCF analyses are very bullish. One detailed two-stage model, for instance, projects a fair value for Dino's stock of PLNN 842 per share.
842.
Yeah.
Compared to a current price, around 504, that implies significant undervaluation. Huge upside.
It does suggest that, yes.
That sounds very optimistic, though. What's driving that kind of bullish forecast? What has to go right?
It is optimistic. It's driven by forecasts of very strong free cash flow generation over the next decade.
How strong?
Free cash flow projected to grow from about PLN 1.1 billion in 2026 to over PLN 6.0 billion by 2035.
Wow. And that assumes?
That's based on assuming continued aggressive store expansion, hitting those higher estimates of total stores, mm-hmm. and improving profitability as new stores mature and contribute more. It basically assumes they navigate the price wars and restore LFL growth.
But DCF is sensitive to inputs, you said.
Imperative to recognize that, yes. Extremely sensitive. A more bearish set of assumptions.
Like what?
Like lower long-term LFL growth, sustained margin compression from competition, slower store openings than management projects, or maybe a higher discount rate reflecting increased risk.
Yeah.
Any of those would result in a substantially lower calculated intrinsic value.
So where does the market stand?
The wide gap between the current market price and some of those bullish DCF targets suggests the market is either using more conservative assumptions in its own internal models, or it's applying a higher discount rate to Dino's future cash flows, reflecting some of the risks and uncertainties we've discussed. It's really a battle of narratives driven by those underlying assumptions about the future. Hashtag out Prostel.
So what does this all mean then? We've taken a deep dive into Dino Polska SA. A company that's built this formidable presence in the Polish grocery market.
Through a uniquely contrarian strategy, right? Focusing on those underserved small communities.
Owning its valuable real estate.
Yeah.
Integrating its fresh meat supply chain. They truly found a niche and just dominated it.
We've seen a business that's been an absolute compounding machine. Reinvesting capital at incredibly high rates, leading to explosive growth for a decade. Mm-hmm. But that recent sharp deceleration in like-for-like sales growth, coupled with intense price competition, rising costs, it's undeniably put its premium valuation under significant scrutiny. It really feels like a moment of inflection.
Okay, so the bullish case points to?
The vast runway for store expansion. The strength and defensibility of its core business model. That hidden value in the real estate portfolio.
And the bearish view.
Questions the sustainability of those historical growth rates and profitability in a maturing, increasingly competitive market, especially as that law of large numbers inevitably starts to weigh on percentage growth.
It's a classic high growth, high valuation dilemma, where future expectations are absolutely everything.
Exactly. And this raises an important question, I think, for you, our listener, as you consider what you've learned today.
Which is?
In an age where digital convenience is increasingly king, what is the ultimate ceiling for a brilliantly executed, physically focused retail model like Dino Polska, especially when facing inevitable market maturation and that law of large numbers slowdown?
How long can a company defy gravity with a brick-and-mortar-first approach in an increasingly digital world?
That's the question to ponder.
Think about that. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this has given you a clearer, more informed, maybe more nuanced perspective on the fascinating world of Dino Polska and the strategic choices shaping its future.
Until next time.
Until next time. Keep those curious minds engaged.